worlds collide, heroes unite, and things will never be the same again. Welcome to The Crossover Connections, a podcast where all forms of entertainment meet up and we dissect. I am your host, Earl, and for my inaugural episode, I am joined this week by Josh.
Hey, howdy, hey.
So, just a bit of a background behind this is, I'm not going to say I'm a huge fan of crossovers. I mean, I think everybody's a huge fan of crossovers, but I've been watching some and reading some recently, and I'm like, this is such a fascinating world that people don't really tackle. Like, you'll hear about stuff here and there, but nobody goes out of their way to actually talk about crossovers. And I'm like, I enjoy them. I love them. I'm sure there's other people who do it too. So I'm like, let's see if we can do a podcast around it. And I honestly don't know if we can do a podcast around it, but I'm going to give it a try. So to start it off, I picked probably one of the weirdest ones to start us off with. We're going to watch Captain N the Game Master, and we're going to talk about it. So Captain N the Game Master, for those who don't know, and we'll get to it later if that's a good or bad thing, was an animated television series from Deke Entertainment that began airing in 1989 on NBC, I believe in America. I asked Josh before we began, you don't know if it aired in Australia, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it actually aired here. I watched it on DVD. I think it was in like the bargain bin of some like discount store. They had DVDs with the Super Mario show and Captain N combined on it. So that's how I found out about it.
I have no idea why such a high quality show would be in the bargain
bin. I know, it's ridiculous. They just don't appreciate true art.
Not at all. a bit of background about this, because apparently this show has an history and an origin. This was originally envisioned as a Nintendo Power segment that an editor would fight with video games at Creation's Mother Brain created. And somehow somebody saw it and said this would be a great idea for a television show. And I actually don't disagree. I think it would be a great idea for a television show. I don't know if this is that, but it would be a great idea for a television show.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea.
Yes, it will go with that. So, a bit of a rundown. Like I said, this began airing in 1989. And it starred a host of, I don't want to say Nintendo characters, I'm going to say a host of characters from video games from the Nintendo Entertainment System. Mm. Because this is actually very light on Nintendo characters.
Yeah, and stars, they managed to get the rights of Castlevania characters, Mega Man characters. Somehow they roped these companies into putting their characters in this bizarre TV show.
Yeah, I get it, because, I mean, if you're Capcom or if you're Konami at that time, any exposure would be good exposure. I mean, you had a Saturday morning cartoon in the 1980s. Like, that is like, a merchandise mover. I mean, that's where, you know, like, my generation's life on fixation with G.I. Joes and Transformers and Ninja Turtles comes from.
Yeah, that is the same Saturday thing morning for me. Cartoon. It's like, even some of those shows, like, yeah, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what else do we have? Dragon Ball, Pokemon, all those sorts of things. Like, waking up early in the morning to watch these shows has always been a big part of everyone's childhood, I think.
Yeah, so I can see why they would be all on board with it. I don't know if they just signed off their rights and were like, that's it, and didn't get anything else.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened.
But before we get too far into the weeds, let's introduce the cast of characters who make up the core cast. Like we said, Simon Belmont from Castlevania, which debuted in 1986. Kid Icarus from Kid Icarus, which pisses me off. But again, we'll get to this in a bit, in that a lot of these characters weren't defined. So, I mean, yes, his name is Pitt now, but maybe at the time his name wasn't given. So they just went with its name, Kid Icarus. Actually, we'll get to that again with Metroid in a second. But Kid Icarus, which debuted in 1987. Mega Man from Mega Man, which, again, debuted in 1987. Mother Brain as the main bat villain from Metroid in 1986. King Hippo from Punch-Out, 1987, as a second-in-command. The Eggplant Wizard from Kid Icarus as a second-in-command.
They got these really big, hard-hitting villains to star in the main cast, didn't they?
It's weird, like, the villains... Okay. It's weird, because the villains... Like, you would think you do this show, you'd line up the villains one-to-one. Like, okay, you have Simon Belmont on one side. So you think the other side, you'd have something from... You'd have Dracula or something from Castlevania. But no, the one-to-one for that is Mother Brain, because you have Mother Brain on the villain side, but you don't have Samus on the hero side. They have King Hippo from Punch-Out, but there's no Little Mac.
Oh, man.
The only one that works is you have Eggplant Wizard and you have Kid Icarus. But even then, Eggplant Wizard is just a normal character in Kid Icarus. It's not like a final boss.
Just a guy.
But I guess that kind of makes sense, because King Hippo is like the first character you see in Punch-Out, so it's not even like the big bad of Punch-Out, but I guess you couldn't get Mike Tyson.
Oh man, that would have been the best.
Oh, I have to imagine getting Mike Tyson would have cost an arm and a leg back then. And then the cast was rounded out by two original characters, Kevin Keane and Princess Anna. And it's kind of interesting, because you would think that Nintendo wasn't short for princesses at the time, but I imagine the reason why Mario and Zelda weren't included were because Mario and Zelda both had cartoons concurrently with this, and we'll get to Zelda in a second, because that is part of one of the two episodes we actually watched for this episode. And along with those characters, in Season 2, they added Game Boy as a character. Now, you might ask, Game Boy isn't a character. I agree. I don't know. Like, yeah, Game Boy's a character. I don't get it, but I understand. You got to make that money somehow.
I'm just curious how it works. Like, so, he's within the game world, but he's a game console. So can he play games that also have their own game worlds within the game world?
Well, see, okay. See, this is where the mythology of the show gets really screwed up. Because like you said, Game Boy is a gaming device within the world, but within the world, the characters don't know that they're game characters, but Kevin does, because Kevin will often reference like, oh yeah, I've played this game, I know how to get, you know, past this boss or this dungeon or whatever, or we're in Donkey Kong or something like that. So does that mean that Game Boy exists in the game world and the real world? Is Game Boy in the real world based off of the Game Boy from the video game world, or is the video game world Game Boy based off of Game Boy?
Man, this is some deep lore.
It is some deep lore. And it's not at all shameless product placement. Because, I mean, let's talk about Kevin for a second. I will be honest with you. When I was a kid, I wanted to dress up as Kevin. I thought it was a really cool outfit. As an adult, I just kind of see it as the shameless marketing drug that it is. Because Kevin's belt... One, his name is Captain N. Which doesn't make any sense in the context of the show. Because his name is Kevin Keane. So you would think his name would be Captain K. They exist in video games. So you would think if that's the case, he'd be Captain V. At no point do they explain why he's Captain N. Like, yes, yeah, it's Captain Nintendo. But... it doesn't work in the context of this show, because again, those characters don't think they're video game characters. But yes, his outfit consists of a Nintendo and an NES controller as his belt buckle. And with that controller, he is able to pause time, jump high, dodge, attack. It has a lot of functionalities for something that already has like four buttons. But okay, the actual controller has four buttons. If you see the one he has, it has the four buttons, and then it has like a keyboard on top or something he can press.
Yeah, it's not a complete one-to-one NES controller. It's like some fancy special edition.
Yes, and he comes armed with his infamous zapper gun as his weapon of choice.
And almost blows Simon's head off it with it the second he meets him.
Well, we'll get to the characters in a second, because I would blow off Simon's head if I met him. but you know, just to kind of hammer home the fact that this is product placement, the TV show, the Oracle of the series, the one that tells the characters about the Kevin coming to Game World and saving them from Mother Brain, is a power glove. Like, it's not a character, it's really a power glove. So it's like, I'm surprised they didn't find a way to work Rob into this. Yeah, I mean, okay, so kind like we mentioned it, we kind of hinted at this before. Diving into the characters real quick. A lot of these, like, we ran through the introduction. A lot of these characters were introduced 2-3 years before the show made its debut. And for a lot of them, that meant there was only one or two entries to base their characters off of. And I don't think anybody played any of the games because they just kind of took names of popular characters and that was it. I have to... Simon Belmont, I think, is the biggest offender. Simon is a vampire hunter who wears, like, brown outfits and carries a whip. And that is pretty... The whip is the only thing that makes it over to the cartoon.
they got the really basics. Like, if you watched a couple of seconds of the game being played, they're like, okay, yep, that's it. That's all we need.
But even then, I would even accept that if any of them looked like their game counterpart.
It's like Kid Icarus so weird. Does. Like,
Mega Man's not even the right color. Mega Man's like a green.
Yeah, and he sounds like he's been smoking like 10 packs just before they started recording.
Yeah, and he has 2 arms instead of the cannon.
He doesn't even have the. Man, I didn't even notice that he doesn't have the Mega Buster. That's like the part of his character,
the defining characteristic. Yeah,
like it's so weird. It's like it's not even like they've gone for a parody or deconstruction of the characters or anything. It's just these weird, not quite right facsimiles or something.
Yeah, and I think the worst part about it, especially with Simon, is that he's not even heroic. Like, I can understand some changes, but he's a coward and he's vain. Those are his 2 characteristics. Oh, and he's also in love with the princess. Like, he's not helpful at all in the first episode.
And he gets everyone sent to, like, the wrong place, and he's just useless. He's arrogant, doesn't listen to anyone.
Yeah. It's an... I can't imagine Konami's like, oh, yeah, that's what we wanted. That's gonna sell some Castlevania game.
That's our protagonist.
Yeah, and again, like I said, he's a big, beefy dude. He's blonde. He's always looking in the mirror trying to fix his hair and stuff like that. He's in love with the princess, which causes headache for Kevin. It's an odd choice. Kid Icarus, again, one, like I said, early in his career, he only had 1 game at this point. So he's named Kid Icarus. We all know that they call him Pit. I would excuse that. It might have just been like they saw concept art for him, because he is the one that looks closest to his design from the game. But like everybody else, he has to get an annoying quirk, and his is that he ends a lot of his sentences with kiss. Like, I'm gonna beat you up, kiss. And it's like, why?
It gets really annoying, a kiss.
Yes, it does. Mega Man, like we mentioned before, he has the right name, and he kind of looks like himself. It's just the wrong color and without his Mega Buster. So yes, he's missing his trademark color. I mean, he's the Blue Bomber and his trademark weapon, but he kind of looks like the character.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I get they didn't have much to go off for the actual characterization of him, so that can be excused, but the design is just not even close.
Yeah, it's... again, I can't imagine that Capcom or Konami or signed off on any of this. So did they just say you can use these characters and that was it?
I think that's the only way this could have worked out.
Yeah, because again, and I'm not even going to say the same thing about Nintendo, because, okay, one, Mother Brain sounds like Yoda Richie. I don't know who... One, who decided to make Mother Brain the main bad guy?
Well, I guess it kind of makes sense. Like, she's the leader of the space pirates. So I guess they wanted, like, a leadership figure. Because, I mean, Bowser and Donkey Kong don't really lead armies or anything in the games that you've seen. So someone in like this big prominent leadership role, I guess it makes sense. But Metroid wasn't as big as like Mario or Zelda or anything like that. Like they could have gone with Ganon, I guess. But yeah, it's a bit odd.
Well, again, I can understand that with Zelda and Mario cartoons being on air, but I was speaking more of the sense that like Mother Brain's big thing is that it's a brain that's stationary. Why would you make that your big bad?
Yeah.
It's a character who can't really move. And it shows even in the show, because she's in this tube speaking to people, but she doesn't really get involved in the action. Everybody has to come to her.
Yeah, yeah.
And King Hippo, which I was confused by, not necessarily the design, but King Hippo isn't a blue character. It's not alien, it's a human. I don't know why he's blue with these saggy tits.
It's like they just heard the name King Hippo. They're like, oh, okay, yep. I know what we've got to do here.
But he doesn't even look like a hippo. Like, I would even buy that if it looked like a hippo. It's a... Like, I think it's a good idea for a character to, like, you know, because he's the muscle. Like, there are scenes where he just punches through the wall, and I'm like, okay, that's really cool. But the design isn't that great. Like, you could have just kept the design, and I think visually it's also pretty... I mean, that came later on, but, like, with the whole thing around his waist, that's actually pretty nifty as well.
Yeah, he's just, like, and then a we creepy, had gross, fat wizard. Guy is the bad guy. It's just kind of weird as a design. Yeah.
And Eggplant Wizard. Actually, I have no real problem with Eggplant Wizard. Other than, like I said, it's not Kid Icarus' main villain, but it designs pretty close to the actual video game, and it's used as a foil, so it's not even like it has to be a main character. It's somebody who's basically a grunt. It's like Bebop and Rocksteady for Mother Brain, and in that case, Eggplant Wizard works.
Yeah, it's just really weird. Like, the big bads of this show, the Moisturize Me Lady from Doctor Who, a fat guy, and a guy who throws vegetables at you, it doesn't really strike fear in your heart at all.
No, it doesn't. And the worst part about it, and we'll get into the show now, is that they're somehow winning. Because at the start of the show, you find out, like, Mother Brain has... basically won and has controlled Video Land for the past 7 years, and then you meet Mother Brain and you meet the henchmen and you're like, how? Like, how bad are these heroes?
Well, I mean, you've got Simon Belmont not doing anything, Mega Man doesn't even have a weapon, and then you've got an angel with a bow, so I guess it kind of makes sense.
I guess it was an easy takeover. They probably just didn't even know they were fighting, and Mother Brain's like, I won.
I mean, it's not like there's much they could do about it.
But, okay, so getting into this show, we watched 2 episodes, and we'll focus mostly on the first one, which is Kevin in Video Land, which is how Kevin King gets from the real world into Video Land. And the thing I don't get, and again, kind of going back to Star Wars... Oh, not going back to Star Wars, but comparing it to Star Wars, is you have a rebellion against this evil Mother Brain. One, there's like 4 people. 2, she's in a palace that's not hidden. And she's not hidden or on the run or anything. She's just hanging out. So, like, again, how did they win? They're not even trying anything.
It's just win by default.
But no, yeah, one showed up. Save the princess or something. It's just like, oh, they're not fighting back. We'll just see if they beat.
We've tried nothing, so yeah, and we're all out of ideas. Just...
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. I mean, that's pretty much what the heroes are saying. It's like, oh, you know, Mother Brain has been, you know, Mother Brain has won. It's been 7 years. I think it's we're out of options. And that's when the Power Glove Oracle comes and tells them about the prophecy of the one called Captain and the Game Master who will save them. And at that point, Kevin, who is playing the Nintendo Entertainment System,
TM,
who's playing Punch-Out terribly, I might add, he's button mashing, gets sucked into the game with his dog.
And he turns into this nightmare fuel green skeleton model for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's like really RECG. And he gets there, and the first thing he wants to do is go back home. And I'm like, this is our hero. This is our main character.
And the second thing he does is profess his love to the princess.
Yes, which I don't get, and it's something that they keep going for the entire series. I think he just has a thing for princesses, because again, the second episode we watched was the Zelda episode, and he meets Zelda, and right away he's in love with her as well.
It's a very accurate game of representation, maybe. I think.
So yes, and so at this point, after 7 years, this is when they finally decide, oh, we should kidnap Princess Anna. And if I remember, they do this by following Simon Belmont, who finally decides that he's going to be a hero, and they don't need Kevin's help. Again, after 7 years of not doing anything, this guy shows up and everybody's like, we should do something. We're not fighting a war here. So they follow Simon Belmont. They kidnap him. They throw him in a warp zone. They kidnap the princess because, again, princess in a castle, no security guards whatsoever. And they take in a mother brain. At that point, Kevin, Mega Man, Kid Icarus, Simon, and his dog, I forget if his dog goes with him, decides to go save the princess. But before they get there, we need more product placement. So they end up in the world of Donkey Kong.
Yeah, because Simon didn't know how the games connect to each other. But Kevin's like, oh, I've played this game before. I know how to get to Metroid from this castle I've never seen before.
Okay. You said that, and I wanted to bring this up, and I forgot about it. The home planet is called Metroid. Again, it's like somebody didn't play the game and just saw the name. Like, Metroid has to be something in the game, so it has to be the planet, right? It's like, sure, that sounds good to me. But yes, Mother Brain lives on the planet Metroid. So yes, they go to Donkey Kong. And again, this is early on. I mean, this is accurate, but it's weird to be reminded of that Donkey Kong is treated as a villain in this. Because Donkey Kong wouldn't really become a hero until Donkey Kong Country much later on. So it was interesting to actually see him be a gigantic villain. And it was actually really... I mean, it was odd to see that they entered with him in his bath time, I guess? But it was nice to see them use Donkey Kong in actually, I thought, an effective way that made sense. Even if it doesn't necessarily make sense on how he's portrayed in his game with the barrels and stuff. But it's nice to see him look very monstrous. Like, he looked monstrous, and it was a cool sequence.
Yeah.
So they're chased by Donkey Kong, and I think they get to... I forget what they get to. It's not asteroids, but it's like a soup that these meteors are shooting out of. And this is when Kevin learns about the power of his NES controller. Because he pauses it, they jump on, but the pause has a limited time frame, so once it unpauses, Simon didn't, because he didn't trust Kevin, so he ends up using his whip to grab on. And I thought that was a really, again, really cool use of the powers of the NES controller, and, you know, like, actually pausing the game and taking advantage of that video game logic.
Yeah, like, it's clever. He's and a then, game master, so he has literal mastery of the game. Using his game controller.
Yeah, and I think that's a novel idea, again, even if it's just trying to sell you games that you already had. But it is novel to be like, okay, you know what, this guy knows these worlds and these shortcuts and these paths because he's played the games, and that comes in advantage. Again, if he actually knew these games, though, he'd be like, what the hell is Planet Metroid?
Yeah, but he's like, I've played Donkey Kong so many times. We've got to jump into the volcano. And you're sitting there thinking, hang on, there's no volcanoes or warp zones in this game. What kind of crazy messed up version of these games?
Or Donkey Kong bath time, so you don't know where the volcano is from his bath. So again, to show you how devastating this war is, they go to Mother Brain's castle on Metroid, and there's no resistance whatsoever. There's no torrents, there's no guns, there's nobody trying to stop them from getting in. They just go to the castle. And I was going to say, I don't even remember what they, like, I know they kidnapped the princess and they tied her up, but were they going to do anything with her?
I don't think they even mentioned it. They do. They just take her, and that's their plan.
Yeah, I mean, again, how bad were these heroes that they were winning? So, yes, they get there, they, you know, they have a fight, they, you know, defeat the bad guys, and for some reason, I forget, like, the show just kind of goes by really quickly. I don't remember why they didn't destroy Mother Brain.
Oh, because his gun runs out of power. Oh, we don't have any. Just at the most convenient moment.
Oh, okay.
And,
of course.
And because he's the only one who can do anything. So the others just stand there, like, oh no.
I mean, it sucks that Mega Man doesn't have like a gun for an
arm.
Oh,
that would be such a cool idea.
It would be so helpful in this scenario, but what can you do? It doesn't work out that way. And they you know, rescue the princess and they bring her back to the castle. Kevin's gonna go home, but then he hears his mother saying, "Oh, it's time to take out the trash." And he's like, "You know what? I'm not gonna do my chores. I'm gonna hide out from the world.
Yeah, I'm gonna fight a war rather than do my chores." But it raises a really interesting question, because if his mother is still there interacting in real time, what's happening when he's in this video world? Are his parents going to freak out thinking he's gone missing and they've got like this whole search party going on while he's just chilling in a video game?
Yeah, I mean, I was curious about that because, I mean, one, I was curious because it didn't seem like a ton of time had passed, because like, it seemed like it's about a day in a game, in video game, but it seems like it's only been a few minutes, but like, the show lasts for 2 seasons, so he's there for a while. Does he go back home every so often to tell his parents, "I'm okay, I'm going to eat, I have to go to school"? Or is he just like, has he just resigned himself to, "I'm going to live in this video game world from now on"?
It's such a weird concept. Like, it's the funny thing about kids' shows. Like, they make sense when you're watching them, but you put the smallest bit of thought into them and they just fall apart.
Yeah, yeah. But again, as a kid, as a kid, I did enjoy this show, so I'm not going to pretend, like, it worked on me. And again, like, you know, a lot of this stuff, this show will be 30 years old next year.
Wow.
A lot of this is just early growing pains of not necessarily knowing, like, these video game worlds and these characters, who are a lot more defined now. But, I mean, we're looking at it at the end of 2018 and not the end of 1989. We can't go back to 1989 with these characters.
And show them Kid Icarus Uprising and show just how crazy different everything is.
I mean, and we will get to this in a bit, because I actually do want to, you know, like I said, I'm a fan of this idea. I would actually be curious to see who you'd want in a modern day version of Captain N. Ooh. But we'll have leave that for our final segment. So you can think about it now.
Got some time.
The other episode we watched was Quest for the Potion of Power, which is an actual crossover with the Legend of Zelda cartoon that was airing at the time. And this confused me. I mean, okay. It confused me in a sense, because like we said before, Video Land exists, and in Video Land there are a bunch of different areas. But this made it seem like The Legend of Zelda is a parallel universe. Like, it exists within it, but it's not within Video Land. It's like its own separate thing. But all these other things exist in Video Land, so I was confused why. Because they know who each other is, because like Zelda is the one who calls for Captain N to come over, but it seems like it's a completely alternate universe.
Do they say that it's a separate place, or is it just a part of Video Land? Like, is Hyrule just a...
Well, that's the thing. Like, they didn't say, but it seems like it was, because like everything, like they need, like, you know, they just can't go there. They need like special, like they need Game Boy to actually open up certain warps for them to get there.
Ah, yeah, okay. So but, maybe it's in like tie-in cartoon land instead of video land. And so there's a world with like the Zelda cartoon and the Mario cartoon in there.
Yeah, I mean, but it also depends, because all the Mario cartoons are actually different cartoons. Like, I don't think there's continuity between the three of them.
Earth 2 Mario. Even though
it's the same voice actors. But yes, and I was also confused. I've spent a long time since I've seen the Legend of Zelda cartoon. I thought Ganon was alive in the cartoon. But in this, he's been out of power for a while. And what they're trying to do is get a potion of power to revive Ganon so that they can control Hyrule. So it is Link and Captain N just being bitchy to each other for an entire half an hour.
It's so cool. Like, Link is just a total asshole because he's been injured in battle and he's afraid that he won't be able to show off.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, it's an early representation of Zelda. I know how Link is in that cartoon. It's just really, it's also weird because, like, once you go into the franchise, you realize, like, most of the time these, like, people in their teens, I mean, I guess it makes sense for him to have that attitude if he's, like, 14, 15. But, yeah, it's also funny because it's a Saturday morning cartoon. So he has a sword, and his sword is mostly used to zap people. He doesn't actually use it in, like, hand-to-hand combat.
And the one time he tries to, he gets totally smashed to the side and is knocked out, pretty much knocked out for the rest of the battle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not a good show for him. he makes it out of, like, I mean, again, out of it makes sense, but it was clearly designed to get Captain N over as the hero. Until eventually Link came to his senses and like, okay, you know, we gotta work together. I've been making some boneheaded decisions. And, of course, to show the theme of Captain and the Game Master, they ultimately do fail. The bad guys get the potion again and it's revived. Shockers to shockers, Ganon then turns on Mother Brain and a fight ensues.
And was I...
But again, the hero showed up just in time.
When Ganon comes back, he says, "Welcome to my coming out party."
Does he say,
I'm pretty sure that's what he said, and I'm like, "What? Oh, that's an interesting twist."
I mean, you do you, Ganon. You do you. what I do find fascinating, and I mean, it is something, but they've kind of gone away with it, and since he went 3D, is I forget that he's a pig monster, and then he kind of transforms into that hyper beast man.
Like, weak so Ganon was say, really cute. He's just like a little porky pig figure having a little sleep,
yeah,
and then they gave him this potion.
It was so. And it looks like a little bottle that he's trying to drink out of. It was so adorable. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't fight that guy. And then he drinks the potion, and he starts growing crows and stuff. I'm like, okay, that guy would probably fight. But not the cute little piggy dude. And again, hero show up just in time. Really no rhyme or reason. No defenses. And they stop getting.
With the magic potion the that they just happened to find along the way.
Oh, yes, the magic... that was my favorite part. It's like, they're like, oh, this potion. I don't know what it does, but it's the best time to try it. I'm like,
and
no,
they just
not.
Know to put it on Link's shield instead of drinking it, which would be, like, the most logical conclusion.
Yeah, who uses a potion? One, you do not test run your potion at a random time. It's not the time to figure out what it does. And your first instinct is to pour it on your shield. Why? I'm like, when did he use his shield at all in this episode? That you're like, oh, this is a great idea to use it right now. I can put it on the sword at least. And then Link and Zelda go back to their thing, and Kevin and Link become best friends. Something like that. So yeah, I mean, that was Kevin and Wanda video end, and quest for the Potion of Power. So... yeah, I mean, fun episodes. I think they give you a good feel of the show. So, the next part of this show, like we were saying, like the hope intended is we're talking crossovers. And, I mean, I think this one's a very easy one. It's one of the reasons I set it up. Do you consider this a crossover series?
Yes. Easy.
Yeah, I figured it's very easy. It stars, you know, there's at least, what, five or six franchises represented in this. They all come from different companies. And it's actually in a realm that none of them are native to. This is the first appearance of Mega Man and Kid Icarus, Simon, in animation. It wouldn't be the last one. Mega Man has several cartoons. And I forget. No, Simon's not the start of the new Castlevania cartoon series.
No.
But, yes. But, yeah, it's a very easy, I think it's a very easy recommendation to say this is a crossover. And it continues to be a crossover. I mean, we highlighted two episodes. We highlighted, I think, Legend of Zelda is the most famous crossover episode. But a lot of the times, it's them going into different video game realms. Like, I think the second episode's Bayou Billy. They visit Donkey Kong more than once.
Dr. Wily's
in the show at some point. Yeah. So there's a lot of those elements. Those really just kind of rolling in those 86, 87 Nintendo franchises into this show as much as possible. Because, honestly speaking, 2018, you say Bayou Billy to a lot of people, probably don't know what you're talking about. And again, much easier to Legend of Zelda is really a crossover with another animated series that ran at the same time. And they actually shared a time shot they shared a block on TV for a short period of time. So yes, crossover status, yes.
Confirmed.
But here's the other one. What type of crossover would you consider this? And I mean, there's a ton of them. These are just the general options that I'm thinking of. Versus crossover, meetup crossover, cameo crossover, team up crossover, mashup, or Elseworld.
I guess the most accurate one would probably be mashup, because it's just all these franchises just kind of mixed up together. But there's elements of the other types as well. Like the Zelda one would be a meetup because he's meeting up with the cartoon Link, so it's sort of a bigger, more defined meetup crossover there. And it can kind of be an Elseworld because none of these representations are very accurate at all.
The only reason I would say it's not an Elseworld though is because it's not like these are the versions of them in animation. Like, it's nothing like their video game counterparts, but it's not being presented as the video games in animations. It's being presented as these characters in this setting, in this world. So yeah, I think I would go with a mashup as well. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not just a mashup of characters, it's a mashup of that whole ecosystem. Like I said, he has an NES controller as his belt, the power gives an Oroku. Game Boy becomes a character in the second season. Fight sticks are in it. He goes into, like, in this the first episode, they go into literally a place called Donkey Kong Land. Don't know who, like, really, the person who names this stuff is just super easy. I think I wrote it down. The only one that kept its names were Castlevania, which makes sense. And I'm almost certain they did the same thing to the Metroid, but at least Castlevania is the actual location the game takes place in.
Yeah.
Metroid, Mount Icarus, Kongo Land, the Palace of Power, and Mega Land are the zones that highlighted in the intro. Also, the warp zones are from Super Mario Brothers. They make a reference to that several times. Like the warp zones from Super Mario Brothers World 4 or something like that.
I like the idea that Super Mario Brothers is sort of like this big mythical legend of the world with a higher status than the others. So they don't know whether the Mario Brothers actually exist. They're like a myth.
That would actually be really cool. I mean, it's actually really funny that, like, it gets a crossover with Zelda, but it never crosses over with Mario, which you would think would be the big get for them.
Mm.
And, yeah, and I think, what was I going to say? Yeah, what I was also going to say is I watched the Zelda episode, and it was just so funny, because, like, the sound effects are from the Mario game. Like, the jumping sound was from Mario. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, it's the sound people are familiar with, but it's kind of weird because he's not here at all. I will also give them credit for that. A lot of the music is like a lot of the characters have their theme kind of mixed into this show score, which is really nice. Like, I could tell, you can tell when Mega Man's on screen, you can tell when Simon's on screen. You can kind of tell when Pit's on screen.
Yeah, and I think there was some, I think okay. the Metroid theme kind of pops up when that Mother Brain's based, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay, that, speaking of Mother Brain, real quick, and I hope to have you back to talk about this if we can track it down in the future.
Oh, well, thank you.
There was actually a Captain and the Game Master comic series.
Ooh.
And that has Metroid, that has Samus in it. But for some reason, they make Samus a horn dog in it who's in love with Kevin.
Oh my god!
So I have not read the comic. I just saw that when I was looking, I was researching this on Wikipedia, and I'm like, okay, now I really have to see this comic because I want to see how bad they butchered Samus in it.
Oh god, that's going to be like the worst interpretation of any of the characters in the franchise.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at some of these characters, and then I read the Samus one. I'm like, okay, that's the character you ruined the most here. Because yes, the woman in armor who hides her identity is going to be the one who falls mad in with your main character. That's what we're going to do. So, okay. We've given you time, so we're going to do this new segment. I mean, my idea was originally to do like a recommendation on this stuff, but I actually find the idea interesting. Because like I said, I think Captain N is a property, or at least an idea or concept, that in my head can work at Nintendo's Kingdom Hearts, where they're allowed to just kind of traverse these various game worlds and characters and use them as they would. So my challenge to you is, if they made a modern day Captain N the Game Master using 3 first party characters and 3 third party characters, who would be your ideal lineup?
Okay, so first party, I think I'd want Splatoon. Or maybe Isabelle from Animal Crossing is sort of like the secretary strategist character. And then maybe Link is sort of like the role he is in here, where he's sort of like a rival character. Third party. How about you, Garrett? I try to think of 3 third party ones. I was thinking first party.
Well, first party, I would go with, I think Fox would be a good one.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
I think that, yeah, I think the Star Fox universe is just kind of ripe for that. You have a ton of enemies. You have, you know, like spaceships, travel, stuff like that. And it's a character who's kind of defined, but not defined enough where, like, I'm just going to be upfront. I'm not going to use Mario, Samus, or Link because I do think that Nintendo probably would baby them too, not baby them, but they hide them, hold them in such high esteem that you probably wouldn't have as much freedom as you would if it's somebody like a Fox. So yeah, I would use Fox. I would like the return of Pit. I do think that especially with Sakurai, that they have been able to develop that character, and he's a lot more. He has an element of comedy to him now that would make sense to carry over into an animated series where you have somebody who can kind of be that guy who laughs at stuff. And then the third one, okay, this is just me because I really think the franchise is underrated, but I would use Dillion from Dillion's Role in Weston.
Ah, okay.
Because I think his cast of characters are just so colorful and unique that I'm just disappointed Nintendo does not do more with that universe. Third party. My first pick would be Shovel Knight.
Ooh, okay.
I think it's a character that Nintendo, you know, it's kind of synonymous with Nintendo. Like, they're, like, you know, Mega Man, Castlevania, at the time, were synonymous with Nintendo. I mean, there was no other option. Like, I don't think they're as, especially Castlevania, I don't think they're as synonymous with Nintendo as now. So Shovel Knight. This would probably rub people the wrong way, but Sonic. I mean, I think, one, he's been in enough animation that he can kind of be a major get for them. But again, he's a character who's iconic, who brings a sense of personality to the team, who brings a world of characters and enemies that you can dig into and reuse. And it's a character that has kind of become synonymous with Nintendo systems. And then I would say... I was going to say Bayonetta, but that would be really weird.
Oh my god, that would be the best.
Actually, I think Isabelle, like you, well, not that's not a third party character. I'm trying to think of a female character to add to the team, because one, it's very opposite towards guys, and even on this show, the female there was the princess who's the damsel in distress.
Yeah, and the love interest.
I do think you need a strong female character to round out the team. Mm. I'm really drawing a blank on a third party character that would be female. That could work.
It's really unfortunate that there isn't any that really stand out.
Yeah, it's sad that even on Nintendo's, and you can't really think of a ton of female characters off the top of your head.
Mm.
You could do one of the princesses and stuff like that, but it's the same issue. I'm trying to think of, like I said, Bayonetta would come to mind, but maybe you could find an antagonist from a protagonist from Castlevania. There's been female leads in that. But yes, that would be my makeup. Have you figured out yours?
Okay, so I've made some changes. So I think Pit will work well, like you said, for the first party. Yeah, because he's been really characterized now through Sakurai's games, so it'd be like a fun anime personality to be there. I still want Isabelle, because I think she'd be really fun as sort of like the team's planner.
Yeah, and strategist.
Yeah, and then the other first party character would be Box Boy. He'd sort of be like Game Boy. He's just sort of like this awkward kind of assist, like a sidekick, I guess. And he has all these funny box abilities, so he wouldn't be able to talk, but he'd always sort of show up and have a way to help, and it'd be really funny because he's just this little box, but he has all this power within him.
It would also be great if he's like kind of the guy who's like, oh crap, we can't get up there, and then he just kind of unfolds himself.
Yeah.
And it's like, magical
like,
staircase.
Like he's always just showing up, and he always just has these crazy Deus Ex Machina things. For third party, I can only think of two. So I've got Mega Man, which I think is kind of an obvious one. He's really capable, so he'd be good in fights. There's lots of personalities you can choose from all the games. Like, you could have Mega Man X, who's sort of more serious rival character. Or you could have classic Mega Man, who's a bit goofier. My second third-party character would be Wonder Red from Wonderful 101. I think he's third-party, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who owns the IP, but that's actually a good one. I mean, honestly speaking, I really, really wanted Wonderful 101 Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, I thought of it when you were saying Bayonetta. I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then I was trying to think of other Platinum games. Then I hit Wonderful 101, which is kind of perfect.
I was going to say, I forgot the name, but the wolf from Okami.
Oh, yeah, Amaterasu.
Yes, because with the paintbrush ability, that would actually be a really cool addition to the team. Kind of like, she could be the one who's responsible for like drawing the portals and stuff.
Yeah, and then she has like a cricket or something who talks for her, right? He could sort of be like a quick-talking, quippy character who's contrasts with her more refined nature.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking while I was going through female characters, I'm like, you know what would actually be a pretty good place to mine from? Because, again, new characters who have personality but they aren't super defined is Arms. Like, I could see, not Tintilla, but like, Ribbon Girl would actually be a really great addition to the team.
Yeah, that would be good. And, I was going back and forth on whether I wanted an Inkling on the team, but I think the world of Splatoon would be cool as well. And there's a few female characters in there that have become popular. Like, you've got the off-the-hook characters, the Squid Sisters, and I think the female Inkling has kind of been accepted as the default. So there's a few things that could work there as well. And the world's really fun and colourful, lots of fun characters. I think we could do a lot with the Splatoon world.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, again, if we were going to do this show, or, I mean, ideally what I would want is, like, a action RPG. But, again, I think Splatoon would be one of those. I think Splatoon would have to be, like, the first game you think of. And, like, this is the world we need to visit because it's so different from everything else Nintendo puts out. Not that it's, you know, all Nintendo games are Kaya, Fu, and Bright, but in the fact that how it uses Kaya against really kind of sterile environments. Like, the environments are real-world environments that you just throw a bunch of neon paint on. And that is just visually so different. That I, and then the movement. Like, how would, like, somebody like Mario Inc. work in ink? Like, does it show them down?
They could have, like, Mario dab. Show up how with his flood work? And try to clean everything. And everyone's like, oh, God, what are you doing, yeah. You monster?
Exactly. That will be, that, I mean, that's a ton of fun. I, like I said, I think the idea of Kid Icarus, the idea of Captain and the Game Master, is a lot better than the execution.
Oh, definitely.
which brings us to the final segment of the day. Recommendation. What do you actually think of Captain and the Game Master?
I think, like, it's really fun. It's just not really something you'd watch if you want a really accurate representation of all these characters coming together. But, I mean, especially now, it's really a product of the 80s. It's really cheesy, campy, but it's fun. Like, the episodes I've watched today, it was fun watching those, even if it's just to make fun of parts of it. But the animation's all right. It's got some good ideas, and the episodes are short, and there's only, like, 2 and a bit seasons, so you could easily get through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with most of that. I do think, one, I think it's a really great snapshot of where video games and Nintendo were in the late 80s. Not in the sense that you're going to get an accurate representation of these characters, but you kind of get an idea of, okay, who was popular, who did kids know, what was, you know, like, what kind, like, again, Punch-Out, I wish, was popular, but it's not really that popular these days. But it's nice to know, like, at a time, Nintendo considered it one of their big IPs, or at least somebody considered it a big IP for them. Castlevania has kind of fallen off in recent years. I think it's just its big jump into 3D. The animation, actually, I do think holds up really well for a late 80s show. There's a lot of cartoons that I think from the 80s. I'm not saying it's great animated.
Yeah, it's,
but
not like it doesn't.
It's not. Yeah, it's not like stiff or anything. It's not like it's not missing frames. As far as I could tell, it wasn't like characters were changing color schemes every other shot. Like, it looks like it's a pretty decent job. I will say what doesn't hold up is the voice acting. A lot of the characters grate on my nerve.
You got Mega Man talking Simon's like this, and he's mega excited.
Yeah. I hate Mother Brain.
Oh, God, what were they doing with Mother Brain?
I dislike Simon. Yeah, like I said, I think they were going for the little Richard thing. And it's like they made her super flamboyant and... there's nothing wrong with that, but the voice is just like really grating because she's talking all the time. I don't mind Kevin so much and Princess Anna, but like most, like, you know, Kid Icarus with everything ended in Icus, and like you say, Mega Man sounding like a coffer. The voice acting gets on my nerves. So if you can get past that, I do think it's worth at least. I wouldn't say watch everything, but I do think it's worth. Like, I enjoyed the Zelda episode. I thought the Zelda episode was a ton of fun. The first episode is fine, but that's mostly set up, so most first episodes tend to be decent. I did find Game Boy Udo annoying because I didn't get the scope of his power. Because at one point, like, he's able to punch somebody by moving the screen.
He's just like the magic product placement character who's there to show everyone how cool the Game Boy is.
Yes, Game Boy, pick it up now, kids. And I mean, it had to work because the Game Boy just sold and sold and sold. And it's all because of Captain and the Game Master.
I remember one episode from the ones I watched. I think there was like a Tetris episode. They've got to like navigate through this world where the blocks are constantly falling down and the pathways disappearing and stuff. But I remember that being a pretty fun idea of implementing a non-action game into a more actiony cartoon.
Yeah, that's a really good. And actually, that would be the other thing I'd actually watch it for. Like I said, the first episode has Donkey Kong. The next one has Bayou Billy. We've seen The Legend of Zelda. You mentioned Tetris, this Mega Man. It's just seeing how they actually do incorporate the video games into the show. Because, like, okay, yes, yeah, like, a lot of the times they clearly have no idea what the actual game's about, but they have some type of basis on, like, okay, this is an element that we can bring over that makes sense. And it does. It may not always work, but it is interesting to see. And I do think it has a better, okay, not better, because there's things, it has a better idea of video game logic than a lot of video game based movies do, except for Wreck-It Ralph and Jumanji.
Mm. I haven't actually seen the new Jumanji, I think Wreck-It Ralph is a good example of how the show could work today. Because I mean, everyone just wanted cameos and things, and there were some people that even though the movie was great, they were just too focused on the cameos that weren't there. Like, I think they wanted Wreck-It Ralph hanging out with Sonic and having a party and all that. But it was really fun seeing all the ways that they even have, like, little cameos and references, like when Ralph's going through the box and the Metal Gear exclamation mark appears, and King Candy using the Konami code to hack into the game. So, I mean, like, there's so much potential for a big video game mashup. So it would be cool to see them try it again today.
Yeah, it would be really awesome. And again, I think, especially if you have the luxury of working with somebody like Nintendo, who have, they have 40 some, they have almost 40 years of experience in IPs in this industry, you'd get a lot more, that was one of the big sticking points for a lot of people at Wreck-It Ralph. It's like Bowser's in it, but, like, where's Mario? Where's Zelda? Where's Link? Mm. Where's Samus? So, we'll see how that goes. So, before we head out for this inaugural episode, Josh, do you want to tell the good people where they can find you?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter, @MarioBones, which is Mario_Bones, because some jerk was squatting on the 1 variant, so I have to put 2 in there and confuse everybody. You can also find me at Monamibo.
Did somebody have the no underscore version?
I can't remember. I remember there was some reason that I had to choose a really complicated version, which had everyone confused for, like, years. But you can also find me at monamibo.com, which is monamibo.com, and that's my big-ish Toys to Life website. It's pretty much just an Amiibo site now, because everything else is dead, but hey!
You got your elbow coming out.
Labo is coming, Smithers.
Yes, and as for me, you can find me at @ER_NOTR, because everybody has a good underscore that's not in any way where you reflect poorly on you finding the name. You can find me at nerdsinthebox.com, where this podcast and many other featured articles and reviews are hosted. So I want to thank Josh for joining with me this week, and for really suffering through Captain
Ending. It's
a good show. It's a good show. It's a fun show. Check out a few episodes, see how you like it. But yes, thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on. It's good to feel like my opinions are important.
And we'll catch you at the next connection.